service would not be what it is without your grace, without your mercy. And God, your goodness and faithfulness has been all through all of our lives. Father, how you carry us, how you pick us up, how you hold on to us when we fall. God, what a testimony of you today. I pray as we sing that song that it revives our heart to realize that, church is about you, that all that we do is for you. And God, today as the men share their testimonies, God, I pray that your word will go forth through them and that it will touch the hearts of all who hear. And we will not walk away the same as when we came today. God, we rise it to you, we lift it to you, and give it, lay it at your feet. We pray this in your son's name. Amen. Thank you. You may be seated. This time we'll have Jason come, as I believe Jason's going to start and share with us today.
Thank you, Pastor. Good morning, everybody. As he said, a lot of you folks already know, Justin and I, help these guys up the sanctity of life. It's a faith-based rehab. And a little bit of a backstory about Justin. Me and Justin, we grew up in Brockway. We came up through Brockway, a little bit of age difference. I'm not saying which way, one way or another. But no problem. But I knew of Justin, so to speak, because we came up through the years. And as teenagers do, we have a tendency to go our own ways, make our own decisions, and go one way or another. But decisions, that's what another thing that comes into play here. We all have the freedom of choice and free will since the beginning of time, since Adam was created and made that mistake. And free will is kind of a catch-22, I like to say. It is kind of a catch-22 in a sense, because we're born with the freedom of choice, but we're also born into with a sin nature. And most likely, more often than not, we have a tendency to make the wrong decisions through lives. And some people learn the easy way, some people learn the hard way. But one way or another, God has a tendency to bring us right back around. He's going to, whether or not it's through word or prayer or the big stick he carries. And some of us that learn the hard way, we have a tendency to learn the hard way. We run into the walls, and we have to learn that way because of our decisions and put us where they put us. And we'd like to talk about, I didn't run across Justin again. I came back, when I came back to the area about 2014, met Pastor Kevin. We came here and shared my testimony with him as well. And at this time, he had the RU services were running through here. And he thought that it'd be good for to show up and to see about how I fit in with the RU services here. And again, that's where I met Justin again. We were our paths crossed again, and I got to know more about this man. This man's conviction here for these guys, and he told me about Mike and Deb, about the job he does down at Island, down Tynesta, with the younger kid, 18 and under. Down there, and the conviction that he speaks with, you'll hear about it here in a second, here in a few minutes, but the conviction he speaks with, it puts me to shame quite a bit, quite a few times when we run groups and everything else, and the dedication he has, this man has for these guys. But he proceeded to tell me about Mike and Deb wanting to start this up in Sheffield for 18 guys, 18 and over, and I was searching. He knew I was searching. Pastor knew I was searching. I was lost for quite a long time because of the poor decisions on my part. A lot of folks know my testimony, but I was definitely searching for something better than where I was at. I was a die setter at one of the local plants, and there was always, it's that feeling you get when you know there's something more out of life. You got more, something more in life. There's a purpose in life. And Justin proceeded to fill me in on what Mike and Deb were doing here, and what they did down at the island as well for the kids down at the island. It seemed that the door was starting to become unlocked. Well, we have a tendency to fall. We have a tendency to kick them doors open. We think we can do our own thing and kick the doors open on our own, but it's not a good way of doing things. And this time it just felt right. Everything felt normal step by step. And then obviously the virus hit and the monkey wrench got thrown into the whole mix. And things kind of fell away there, fell apart, and the world went, lost their minds for a time. And the sad part of it is that they were listening to the truth. It's called today's culture, today's society. Anything that comes out of anyone's mouth is considered the truth. The thing about Christ followers, those of us that follow Christ, we know where the truth comes from. There's only one place. It doesn't come from TikTok. It doesn't come from Facebook. It doesn't come from YouTube. And that's what we want to help these guys. We want to teach you to help these guys get through to these guys that have changed their comfort zones. Because the definition of addiction has been, it's been twisted and turned the same as the Christian has been beat around. For the term Christian has been beat around as well. But when people talk about addiction, they automatically think sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That is, but we're talking about, you have to look at the whole spectrum. You can't just look at just a few of the worst. I mean, gambling, drugs, alcohol, yes, that may be the case. But addiction expands past boundaries. It overruns boundaries. I mean, anything from food to money to cars, houses, property, the list goes on and on. If you use the word, if you ever heard the terms whenever somebody's talking in their normal everyday conversation, I got to do this, I have to do this, I have to have that, I must have that, I must do this. You're pretty much looking at someone that's addicted to something one way or another. And it even crosses the boundaries of even emotions. I mean, hatred, jealousy, love can even be an addiction. And I've seen that in many cases down through the years. And it's not a pretty sight. Like I said, more people are addicted than we can think, than we actually have a perception of in today's society. But the comfort zone is what we want to change. We have a tendency as human beings, we're like turtles. Whenever you poke or prod a turtle, it has a tendency to pull itself into its shell. We as humans have the same thing. When we are faced with adversity, struggles in our lives, whether the doctor just called and said they found a lump, or the doctor called and they found a mass, they seen a mass on the x-ray, a family member had just passed, sends you off into spiraling, off into depression, we have a tendency to run to our comfort zones. And our comfort zones are what we have redefined down through the years. Whether it may be drugs, whether it be alcohol, whether it be food, exercise, whatever it may be, we've let something else take the place of Christ in our lives as a foundation in our lives. And that borderlines, that's crossing over even into idolatry as well, because we let these things become our gods now. We run, that's our comfort zone. We have a tendency to run to that comfort zone when we have struggles, when we go through adversity and everything else. That's what we want to change. We want to change the definition, not only of addiction, but change the definition of the comfort zone. We want to bring the comfort zone back around to Christ. Christ needs to be the foundation and the cornerstone of our lives, of our families' lives, the church's lives, and that's what we want to do, help these guys. We want to change the comfort zone to the point where, in their own minds, they come back to Christ. They always bring it back to Christ, bring the problems back to Christ, and lay them down at his feet, whether it be in their own family, whether it be in their own churches, their own communities, whatever it may be. But there's a serious case out there that we have. You don't have to go across the pond, swim the pond over in for the foreign lands as a missionary to understand to do it. The missions right outside these doors, the mission fields right outside these doors in our own towns, in our own cities, right outside our own back door. And I like to, there's a statement, I can't remember which one it was down through the years as far as picked it up from the military, but they talk about mines are like parachutes. They only function while open. That's more of a true statement now so than ever, but we're trying to help these guys. Like I said, we want to help redefine, help the communities and everybody out to understand, redefine the term addiction, understand how far addiction can reach, I mean, it's how many people have ever heard someone use the term adrenaline junkie? Somebody describe someone as an adrenaline junkie. I did it myself. I mean, it's just another form of addiction, just another form of drug if we let it become one. And the sad part of it is, excuse me, we do let it take place, take precedence in our lives, in our minds. And Christ is no longer the cornerstone of the foundation. It's been knocked out. It's been kicked out, moved out of the way. And I talked to even on Sunday evening, we were talking about Paul here, and we talked about how history repeats itself. But history repeats itself in so many ways, but most of the time, most often, more often than not, history repeats itself for the worst. Examples in life, because we're talking about Paul, how he decimated the Jews, how he killed the Jews, put a hurting on them down through the years. I mean, it's just a non-stop circle. I mean, you have Hitler, you have whatever, however you want to describe, but Hitler, I mean, history repeats itself for the worst, usually for worse examples for that. But let's try to make history repeat itself for the better, the better the examples, like Pastor said, as far as we pay it forward. Our decisions that we've made, the poor decisions that we've made in the past, are the reason, like I said, God's mercy, God's grace is the only reason I'm standing here today. I can tell you that. I'm sure Jordan, Justin, anybody that comes through here, we can say the same thing. There are times in our lives for a fact that I know I should not be standing here today to do this job, to do any of these jobs. And it's only because of God's grace and prayer warriors, the people that are praying for me constantly every day, day in, day out. Because I know for a fact there wasn't I wasn't doing a lot of praying at the time whenever I did made the decision to put me where I was at for over a decade worth. And didn't like myself, didn't like the world too. I didn't care for that anything too much. But it's the same as you look at Paul, you look at David, you look at Moses. It doesn't matter how many beatings they took, how many stonings they took, how many years they spent in prison, how many whatever it may be, they still paid it forward. Their life, the history, their past spoke for itself. Actions speak louder than words in a case like this, and it's a definite fact. But our actions have to speak louder than our words that are coming out of the mouths today. So, but Justin?
Jason, I believe we are helping these guys, but I got to say right off the bat, these guys are helping us. 7 years ago, January 11th, I'm not going to be telling them about my testimony. Everybody knows my testimony. I had to do something. I had a lot of shame, guilt, and I was a mess. And I didn't want to tell people my mess because I didn't want to be judged. I didn't want people to know because I didn't think they'd understand. Until I hit my knees and I promised God, life's going to look a lot different. Life's going to look different. I don't care what people, God made my mess a message. How many of you guys got out there that has a mess, but you're not willing to share it because you think you're going to be judged from the guy to the left to the guy to the right. It doesn't matter no more. Listen, people thought I was a mess before. They're going to think I'm a mess now. But if this mess can bring somebody to Jesus Christ, let this mess continue. 7 years ago, I knew something was going to be different. God has changed. I laugh when people say, he took your addiction. No, he didn't just take my addiction. He changed everything about me. Changed my heart, how I feel about people. How when I see people hurt, I hurt. When I see people in need, I need. Well, when I left Teen Challenge, I didn't know what it was going to look like because all my friends were either dead or drug addicts. And I laugh. I was asked to come to this church, and I felt like I was obligated because the guy hired me for a job. So I said, one service is on Wednesday night. I sat way back there, and he started breaking it down the Bible. I just, tears coming from my eyes. I'm like, all right, God, I'll continue going to this man here. Pastor Kevin, you've been a true man of God. You told me things I don't want to hear, but you always stood by my side no matter what. I laugh because there's only a few people I can say that. I don't have a lot of friends, but the people I have. Jeff, you're the same way, man. Most of you tell me I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear the things that come out of your mouth. I don't like it. But I will go home and I'll think about it and I know why you tell me what you tell me. When I say blessed, I'm beyond blessed to have the people in my family. So bringing your mess to a message. 7 years ago, I came out of Teen Challenge on fire for Jesus Christ. I used to go around telling people I will run a faith-based rehab. Nobody else knew. Actually, I didn't know either. But I knew God had a plan for my life. And when I knew when I seen people hurting, I was going to be there for them. So that's what I did. And we're so small-minded, I think. I thought I was out to just help people with addiction, nobody else. Then I got called to work with these troubled youth. I thought, I'm not good with youth. I may hurt one. But God sent me anyhow. And I fell in love with these people. I fell in love with these kids. When they were in pain, I was in pain. When I seen what they went through, all I could do is cry for them. So I stayed for 4 years. And Sanctity of Life opened up. And I realized, I knew it was my calling to head up there, but you don't realize what you have in front of you until you start losing it. And it was hard for me to leave my kids. So I went up there and started working there. But 4 years ago, I met a kid. I ran around this world telling everybody about Jesus Christ. I was known as the Bible thumper, the Jesus freak. You know, I was actually excited about that because I was known a lot worse than that. So I would run reckless. My wife wouldn't tell you. Like, there'd be people blowing my phone up at 2 in the morning. Can you come, please, help, help? And I would because my heart was there to help them. Then I realized you can't help people unless they want help. So I got a message off Messenger, this kid from Brookfield named Jordan Matthews, calling me up. Hey, Justin, I heard a lot about you. And I'm like, I would like to meet. I didn't even message him back because I was thinking just another kid wants me to save him that I can't do. So the next week he messaged me again. So I thought, Justin, you got to meet him. You're coming through Brookville every day. So I met him up at Denny's. We ate. The first time I spoke to him, I seen this guy's heart. I knew it way before he knew it. I knew God had a plan for this kid's life. I knew he was different. So I tried to help Jordan. And, we played softball together. We did a lot of things together. And then all of a sudden, life hits. Jordan had a couple things in his life that hit him. And we stopped keeping in touch. Well, I know better. When you stop keeping in touch and you stop getting a hold of me, something's going on. And it bothered me because me and Jordan built a really good relationship. And I was going to the courthouses that talked about sanctity of life. And I was in Jefferson County. I was telling everybody. And I know all the probation officers because I spent enough time on there. So I looked. I said, hey, how's that Jordan Matthews doing? And they all shut up and don't say a word. You already told me the answer. Thanks, guys. And we're sitting there about an hour later, we're having this conversation. And one probation I didn't know, he says, can I talk to you, Justin? I thought he was going to talk about the program. He goes, he's upstairs. Who's upstairs? Jordan's upstairs. What do you want me to do? He's going to prison. Go talk to him. I went up there and I come up the steps and, I'm sarcastic. Jordan, how's it going? It's good. I said, your face is telling me otherwise, buddy. He's like, Justin, shh, they're right behind you. I know they're behind me. They know you're behind me. And my passion, my heart, I start getting loud. And I started getting loud, and I'm like, Justin, take him into the office. And I guarantee two floors heard me yelling at him. And I said, listen, what are you going to do, man? You're going back to prison. And he's crying. He's like, I don't have no more runs in me, Justin. I don't have no more runs in me. I said, you're going to tell your kids goodbye again. He's like, please help. He's like, I don't have no more runs in me. And I just got angry. I said, I loved you like a brother, man. And he just picked out, loved. He said, you just love me? I was so angry. And I said, don't do that. I said, don't do that. You know I love you. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't be up here talking to you. And we both broke down. I'm thinking, trying to scream at him and talk to God at the same time. It's getting real hard. So I'm like, God, you got to do something here. Please do something. Please do something. And I got done yelling at Jordan. And I think all the probation officers heard me scream. I said, can I talk to you? They're like, yeah. I said, we can't send him to prison. They're like, what are we going to do with him, Justin? I said, let's put him on an ankle bracelet for 2 months. And I'll accept him in sanctity of life. I've got to work with Jordan. I got to work with Jason. When I say beyond blessed. These guys help me with my struggles daily. They give me, you know, how many times we all say, well, it's time to get in the Bible, but we don't get in the Bible. I know I ain't the only one. And they give me accountability. They give me purpose. And I'm watching life change right in front of me. And when I say that, it's just, it's beyond. Addiction is, I have to say, it's probably one of the toughest ministries I've ever even think. Because, man, sometimes I feel like you could talk to the wall and get more response out of that wall than you could some of these guys. But it ain't about changing one lives. And it's not always about us seeing us change. We are called to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. But the problem is, if we don't live the gospel, you can preach all you want. If you ain't showing people the love of Jesus Christ, it's just another book, man. The Bible's just another book. I know, especially with addicts, don't talk to me until you can show me something. Let me see that you care, because everybody says they care until it gets hard. So it's honestly, it's when I say it's beyond blessings. I watched, and I'll let him tell you the rest, but I watched Jordan. I just watched him growing up. I laugh because, you know, when Jason came on, them two guys were bumping heads every day. I said, get to know them. So I had no choice besides let them get to know each other. You two, quality time. All day you're spending together. Let somebody say something wrong about Jason once and let Jordan hear about it. That won't happen. It's getting to know people, getting to know their hurt and their pains. So come on up here, Jordan. Got it?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, I can't thank Justin and Jason enough. You know, they're two brothers in Christ, two great mentors. You know, I've spent a lot of time with Justin. And like he said, I might not like Jason right off the bat, but I'll go to bat for him now over anything. You know, he's a great dude. I don't know why I didn't like him at first. I just didn't like him. I had no reason to not like him. I just didn't like him. But, you know, all my life I thought just believing in God was good enough. You know, I mean, I didn't know. I grew up, you know, going to church, but I didn't really, my family wasn't, you know, all in. But since accepting, you know, the Lord as my Lord and Savior, my life's changed a lot, you know, just in 6 months, or 5 months, 6 months. But I view everything different, you know. I think I know Justin tells me a lot that I don't want to hear, but I know it's for a reason. Some days I don't like him, some days I love him, you know? But that's what he's there for, you know? So growing up, I grew up in Brookville with an older sister and a younger brother. But my family, my mom and dad always fought. And my mom was always yelling at my dad. My dad just kind of said, he didn't do much, but he drank a lot. So, I mean, it was a two-way street. But so I grew up angry, and I just did what I wanted to do, you know. I never was really told no. So I kind of just grew up on my own, you know, with my brother and sister. And I'm fortunate that the addiction happened to me and not those two. But once I got old enough to go on my own, I moved with my grandfather. I'd have been 17 at this point. I was very good at baseball growing up, you know. And I couldn't keep my grades up in school, partially because I was getting hot, you know, smoking weed, stealing my grandfather's pain pills. But baseball was my love, and once I was told that I couldn't play baseball no more, I pretty much gave up on everything. You know, I quit school. I took advantage of my grandparent. I didn't talk to my mom and dad very much, and all my relationships with my family kind of broke, you know. But as I progressed, you know, through 17 into 18, got in trouble for the first time. I mean, right at 18, I didn't think moving to my grandpa's was going to be as bad as it was, but it was the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I was there. I got in trouble for receiving stolen property and theft by unlawful taking for stealing scrap, you know, to support our addiction. And then I remember going in front of the judge the first time. He told me, he said, you know, I see something in you, Jordan. He said, don't screw this up. He said, I could give you 5 years probation with no jail time, you know. I think I made it 3 months. It wasn't very long, 3 or 4 months. But then I was back in front of him. And I was a little nervous because I knew it wasn't going to go the way I had planned. And I heard probation recommend 9 months in the county and then a rehab afterwards, and I was all for that. I wasn't too bad, you know. But I heard Fordora say, you know, he's going to deny that offer and he's going to send me to state prison, you know, 19 years old for the first time. I was going to prison. I did 2 years that time. I really wanted, you know, I had good intentions at that point, you know. I don't know if it was fear, I don't know what it was, but I really, you know, I wanted to do good that time, but I didn't. So I wasn't out very long. I was out long enough for now my ex-girlfriend to get pregnant. But she got pregnant with my oldest son. And I think I was only out like 8 months, but then I ended up getting a probation violation. Again, I went back to prison. At this point, I don't know what changed in my mind, but it was wide open, you know. It was like a city inside of a fence every time I went back to prison. There was more drugs there than there was at home, you know. So I just continued to do what I knew was easy and got high. So I didn't change a thing the whole 18 months I was gone that time. My son was born. My sister was bringing him in to see me. I think he was 9 months old when I got out. Terrified to be a father, you know. I wouldn't even hold him at visiting because I didn't know what or how, you know, to be a father. But so I got out, and I knew that, like I said, I didn't change a thing. But I convinced my entire family the whole time while I was gone, you know, that I was doing great and everything was going good. I'd lie to them so they would send me money so I could get high while I was in prison, you know. I told my sister some horrible things that I'll never forget, you know. And if she was here, she would tell you the same thing, you know. I remember telling her that I was going to get killed if she didn't send this guy $300 because I lost it on the poker table. I wasn't playing no poker. I was just getting high. But her fear got so bad of me being there, you know, from manipulating her and telling her everything that I could in the world just to get what I wanted, that she finally got to the point where she's like, Jordan, I don't care if you get killed. Like, I can't help you no more, you know. I know something's going on, you know. We're talking thousands of dollars later. So I finally drove her into the ground, you know, and she's one of the best sisters in the world, you know. She supports me through everything, still to this day. But I just used and abused them, you know. Same with my family, you know. I said I just took advantage of them. My Rachel, my sister, was my girlfriend and my sister. And she ended up leaving, too, last April. Because she just got tired of it, too, you know. I just lived a fast lifestyle. If I wasn't getting high, I was doing something wrong, you know. I did, not even criminal, you know, just something with the family, you know. I would spend more time away than I would at home. I don't know if it was partially because dealing with the kids or what, you know, but I knew I was doing wrong. At this point, I had a younger kid, son now, and I was there for him to be born, and we built a great bond together, you know. But me and my oldest son now, today, you know, have a great relationship. But at first, I was timid, you know. I was scared. I was spiteful of Rachel, you know. I think that coming home to someone else being there was very hard, you know. I used to tell her, like, he took my place, you know. It was something I wasn't used to. But I wouldn't change it for the world, like I said. I mean, they're two great sons. We're leading them in the right direction now, and for the best, you know. Rachel needed to leave, you know. I think that was a great eye-opener for me, and I took advantage of her for years, you know. If I was my sister, I'd have left a long time, too, but she sticks around. I took advantage of Rachel for a long, long time, you know, and then she finally, once she seen that I was changing, you know, and the change, things changed with our relationship, you know, and our how we view things, you know, how we talk to each other now. I used to call her horrible things, you know. One thing I promised was I'd never call her out of her name again, you know, and I've stuck to that. And I think that changes, you know. With God, I think anything's possible, you know. I mean, he's changed my views on a lot of things, you know. Not just my addiction. Like, I have lived a war for the last 12 years, and I'm tired of living like that. I got two great people, you know, even a lot of support, you know, behind people that see something in me, you know. I just got to take advantage of that, you know. And my two kids, you know, I made him a promise this time, you know, something's different, you know. I can feel it in my heart. They don't got to worry about Dad dying no more, you know, or Dad not being around. So I'm very fortunate for how this has happened, you know. At first, when Justin came to the courthouse that day, I just thought it was a coincidence, you know. But every time I thought about it, it gave me chills, so I knew something else was there. I knew something was wrong. I knew something was off, you know. Well, that was God, you know, and it took me a minute to realize it or believe it, you know. I would push it off as a coincidence, and Rachel would say, that was God, Jordan, that's your saving grace. You know, and I was, yeah. You know, I brush it off, but I truly, truly think that if it wasn't for where I'm at today, I wouldn't be who I am, you know, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that I've got at Sanctity of Life, you know. They offer a lot for you to, you know, they give you tools to change your life, whether you want to do it or not, you know. I mean, you can fake it to make it, or you can change, you know. There's two options. It's only affecting you and God, you know. I mean, he can tell who's real and who's not. I remember Justin asked me a few years ago to tell my testimony, and I wouldn't do it, you know. I was scared. But I knew in my heart that I wasn't done getting high, so I wasn't going to stand up here and preach to people, you know, and tell them about God until I knew that I really accepted God into my heart. And 2 years ago, I'd have been lying to you, you know. But as far as Jason goes, too, you know, I mean, he's got a great heart, huge heart. He still might butt heads quite a bit, like I said. But it's just because he grumbles about a lot of things. He's like a big bear. I wouldn't ask for anybody better, though, you know, even with Mike and Deb, you know, they're great support. Justin and Jason. I feel like this program is going to do a lot of good for a lot of people, you know, in the future. And like they said, you know, if you know anybody in need, or, you know, if anybody is in need that you know, come our way, you know, I think it could really help a lot of people if they're willing to change. You know, the first question is 6 to 12 months. You know, it's a long program. You know, if you're not willing to accept the length of the program, you're not really ready to change, you know. But I don't want to take up any more of your guys' time, so I appreciate everything. But I'm thankful for everything I have today, and I'm thankful for what God's done in my life. Thank you, guys.
I'm going to give you the Reader Digest quick version. No, I just turn your Bibles to James, will you please? James chapter 1. We began a study in James 1 prior to my surgery, and we're going to jump back into it next Sunday. But I just want to share something quickly. This has been really struggling with me as we study through the first four verses. Before I went down, verse 4, but let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. You break that verse down, and what that verse means is that we're not going to be perfection. We're not going to be perfect. Man, we're sinners saved by grace, and we're going to make those mistakes. And we've been talking about trials. We've been talking about struggles in our life. And a lot of times when we think of trials and struggles in our life, we think, well, you know, out there things happen. Life hits. And we have those struggles and we have those issues and we have those problems. But sometimes we struggle because we just made a bad choice. Taking responsibility of the bad choice is the first step into recovering from it. Because when you blame everybody else around you, you blame society, you blame everybody, you're not taking responsibility for the choice you made. And I'm pretty positive, me first in line, all of us have made a bad choice in our life. We may not have ended up where some of these men have ended up, but we made bad choices. And I want to encourage you, because we talk about the trials and the tribulations, we talk about finding joy. James says, find joy. But it doesn't say find joy of the trial. Don't find joy just like, all right, God, you know, I'm so happy. You're about ready to hit me with a Mack truck. Yay. No. When you're in the trial, you grab onto the joy of God. Because it's that joy. Nehemiah says, the joy of the Lord is my strength. You see, we're not supposed to find joy as we go into it. We find joy in it because Christ is there. And by way of testimony, you've heard it very clearly. Without the mercy of God, where would they be? Without the mercy of God, where would you be tonight? Where would you be? You see, when we think of that verse, and again, perfect, complete, it's talking about a maturity. It's not talking about a perfection of sinlessness. It's not talking about, I'm going to live a life now. You know, I make all these promises. Even as Jordan has said, you know, I promised I wouldn't do this. And I promised I wouldn't do that. Listen, I promise people all the time. But I guarantee you somewhere in my life, I'm going to break a promise. I'm going to break that promise because I'm human. Because I still got that sin nature in me. And I still got the ability to say things and to do things. We all do. Christ is not talking about perfection. What he's talking about is a mature Christian life that's built upon. You know how you get that mature life? I'm going to share real quickly. We don't want to keep you too long, but I can. (Clears throat) Please don't leave. Anyway, Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. I want to read a verse. I want to really text. Listen, this is how, no matter how you get into your bad day, no matter how you get into your struggle, this is how you live through. And this is how you continue to live through. In Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 21 and following, Christ is now explaining to the disciples. In 21, he begins to show his disciples how he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things of the chief or the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. For the first time, the disciples now realize this is going to be a bad day. He is going to go and he's going to die. And so what does Peter do? The first thing Peter does in verse 22, then Peter took him and began to rebuke him and say, "Be it far from thee, Lord. This shall not." What Peter is saying in our language is, this ain't going to happen. I promise you, God, that is not going to happen. How crazy was that? That he can promise Christ, you're not going to die. But at that moment, what Peter didn't realize is that to be a Christ follower, the number one thing you need to do is you need to deny self. Why did Peter say that? I don't want you to go. Christ, nobody's going to touch you. I don't want you to leave. I want you to be. Listen, we got a good thing going here. I don't want you to die. I want to be a part of this. Peter, without denying himself, made a statement, a very bold statement to Christ. That's not going to happen. You're not going to die. Listen, one of the ways that we need to live through because of our bad choices or because we live in a broken world, expect the brokenness to hit you someday, somehow, some way. Because all of that comes into play, Christ's response to him in verse 23, he turned and said unto Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but of you, Peter." You want what you want, Peter. You don't want the things of God. The things of God, God sent me here to seek and to save. God sent me here to die. God sent me here to die on a cross for all of you. Get behind me. Because you're now worried about what man wants. You're now worried about what you want, Peter. And the next phrase, verse 24. Then Jesus said to the disciple, "If any man come after me, deny himself." Folks, as Christians today, we have a problem denying ourselves. We have a living in a world where we don't deny ourselves. We indulge ourselves. And I'm talking Christians. Expect it from the world. Expect the world to be evil because they're run by evil. Expect the world to do all the things that they're doing. And don't blame God for it. But when God's children stop denying themselves, what happened in Peter's life? When Peter didn't deny himself, what did he do? He rebuked Christ. Are you serious? He rebuked Christ. He tried to stop the plan of God. And listen, we Christians stop the plan of God in our life because we don't deny ourselves enough to let God do something in us and through us. Listen, these men, man, my heart goes out to them and to the many like them that are struggling to find a hope, that are struggling to find some reason to wake up in the morning. And so they go to the addiction. And they go around a direction that not only compounds their problems, but now gives them less hope and less encouragement. And listen, there's too many Peters in God's house today. There's too many Peters who won't deny themselves and say, "God, here am I, send me." Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1. "God, send me. God, there's a ministry out there. There's people that need to know Christ. God, send me." But not on Tuesday because I have things to do. "Oh, I can't go there because I'm afraid they don't like me. Oh, now, I can't talk to that family member because, man, live, I may not be on the Christmas invitation." But you'd rather see them go to hell. Nice. Enjoy your party. Listen, we as Christians need to learn the very first step in following Christ is denying ourselves. Get out there. Be a part of. Find that frontline ministry. Get involved in lives. Get dirty. Get down in the mud. Listen, God saved you from the mud once. He'll bring you back out. He's not going to leave you in the mud. But we're dressed up. Listen, what do I look like? Where do I look like I'm going today? I heard it this morning. Somebody said it out there, and I laughed. Say it. Where do I look like I'm going?
The gym, but I know better.
That was human sinfulness, the second part. Listen, that's only because I can't get things up over my knee. But anyway, I think church, y'all need to come dressed like you're going to work out. You need to come looking like you're able to say, you know what? I've got problems, and I'm going to go to church, and I'm going to see if the preacher says anything about my problem today. I guarantee you, God's spirit in us, he's going to weave that. And so when we need to realize that church isn't a place that you dress up on the outside. Listen, when you go to the gym, you go to the gym to sweat, don't you? Well, most people. You go to the gym. I just go to talk to people. You go to the gym. You work out why? Why do you take the time to run the treadmill? Why do you take the time to lift the weights? Why do you take the time to do anything? Because you want to look good, don't you? You want to be able to walk around like, you know, I can't do it. But you want to walk around. You want to walk around like one of these guys that are buffed. You know, you got that beach bum body. First of all, you're a bum. Forget the beach body. You got all these things that you're trying to do. Why? So that your outer appearance looks great. And there's nothing wrong with the gym. If you all got a membership, great. My problem is you come to church dressed up on the outside, but you forget about the work on the inside. You just want to look good. You want to look good. Listen, Peter was looking real good until he rebuked Christ. And then Christ said, get out of my way. Get. I'll tell you what. I never want Christ to tell me to get. Deny yourself. You got to deny yourself. The cross that you bear, the next phrase, take up your cross. The next phrase in that simply says, because you're going to bear that cross is the trials and the tribulations of your life. Some people say, well, my cross is my gift, my ministry. No, it's not. Your gift is a gift from God. It's not a cross. Your ministry is a ministry from God. It's not a burden. It's a blessing. Your trials and tribulation of life are your cross. And as we studied back in James, the first four verses, find joy in that, will you? Find joy in your tribulation. Find joy in your cross. Because when you're able to lift it up, and that Greek word there, lift up, means to lift up your cross. Not drag it behind. Not complain about it. Not wishing you had a different one. Oh, you don't want to do that to God. He has a way to give you a bigger and a heavier cross. You lift your cross up to God. Why? Because God, I'm going to deny me. Because what me right now hurts. Me right now stinks. Me right now can't do this. God, I'm going to lift that cross to you. And the third phrase, and I'm going to follow you. God, wherever you lead me, I'm going to follow you. You see, we need to understand for individuals that are going through a hard time in our world, for them to look at us, they need to look at us and see different. They don't need to see the dressed up facades. They don't need to see the Sunday suits with the Monday t-shirt. They need to see real, genuine joy and love of Christ coming out of your heart every day, every event, everywhere you go. And that's the challenge. That's what will change lives. Then you get the opportunity to actually tell them something. As Justin said, they're not going to listen because I trust you. They're smarter, street smarter, than you are biblical smarter. And they know the difference. And they'll see the difference. And they will laugh at you. Because you think, you believe what you speak. Listen, if you ain't going to walk it, don't talk it. If you're not coming to church to work out the heart struggles, don't come. Don't come. It's not worth the wasted time to come to church without working out the heart struggles while you're here. Because that's the only reason we come. Should be the only reason we come. And as these men give testimony, I pray that all of us have that testimony of Christ. Man, I am so excited that God still reigns. I'm so excited that God still is in the business of changing the heart of men and women. And I'm still grateful that he still chooses me and you as a vessel to do it. But see, that's what ministry is. That's what love of Christ is. We got to share that in our heart and life every time. Maybe you're here this morning and you're struggling with some of that. You're struggling either. Maybe you're here, you're unsaved. You don't know Christ. Scripture is very clear. Call out in Christ's name, you're saved. Believe in your heart that God sent his son to die and that he rose him from the dead. And confession with the mouth, the heart believeth, you're saved. It's that simple. It's as simple as simply, God, I'm denying me right now. Christian, are you denying yourself today? Or are you caught up in the facade of organized religion, organized church? Listen, we got to get away from, I know there has to be some organization. Because when there's no rules, there's organization, there's chaos. Now ask him. I'm chaos sometimes. A lot of times I'm chaos. Because I go. You got to go. You got to keep moving. You got to keep busy for God. And in the realm of that, my question to all of us today, go back. Don't think you're going to be strong enough to carry your cross. Don't think you're going to be good enough to follow God until you deny yourself first. What is it that you need to deny today? What in your heart and life you got to deny? Because that's the important phrase. That we look and God, what, God, here am I. God, what am I doing? What am I gaining? What are my purposes? As Jordan mentioned, man, Christ came into his life and guess what changed? His purpose. His focus, his reason. And if you're here and you know Christ, all of that should be different in your life. Don't look like the world. Survive in a world, we must. Live in a world, we must. Work in the world, we must. But don't ever become a part of their custom, culture, or creeds. Because God has a set that you need to follow, not the world's. If you're here today and you got struggles and you want to talk about them, we're going to sing here in a minute. Come on. Come on and talk about them. Come on and give them to God. Don't be afraid. Jordan, thank you. For him to come up and stand, I'm not sure he's a paid professional speaker. I leaned over to him when we first started. I said, listen, don't be nervous. I said, don't be nervous. Just share your heart, brother. For him to get up and tell you his junk. And then to tell you God cleaned it. That's more than some of you will do, isn't it? Keep cleaning. Keep letting God clean it. If you got to do some cleaning today, don't walk away. Don't go away until God helps you with that. Father, we thank you for this day. Lord, as we continue to just praise you. Father, we can praise you with lips, but that's not what you want. We can praise you with service, but as you told us,